Welcome to all our audience and welcome to our guests for this event. This is yet another event of the new Center for Research in Contemporary Greece and Cyprus at the Hellenic Observatory at LSE. We have a series of online webinars organized in this format, and this is the latest of these on the topic of searching for growth drivers. A debate with the chief economists of the systemic Greek banks. One could ask why talk about growth drivers with the bankers? What do banks have to do with growth? But of course, the banking system is what provides the liquidity, provides the resources for investment in the economy. And I think increasingly now it is all more important under the developments at the European level, perhaps also globally, with more efforts by governments to steer economic activity through new industrial policy, through new layers of protectionism, including also in defense policy. So the banking system is, of course, the mechanism that can direct funding into different sector segments of the economy, but also the system that provides the liquidity also for consumption and for everything else. So definitely important, but also especially the research departments and the chief economists of the banks have a very big oversight of how the economy works, what parts of the economy work and how. So we are very, very pleased to be hosting this debate with the four chief economists of the four systemic banks here in Greece. The format of the event will be as follows. I will pass on the floor to my colleague, Anthony Bartzokas, who will start with a framing presentation, and he will coordinate and the discussion with our four speakers. In about 50 minutes from now, we'll pass the floor to the audience for a Q&A with you. If you want to ask a question, please type it in using the Q&A button, and we'll try to cover as many of the questions as we can. Okay, with these introductory remarks and with my personal thanks to our panelists today, I will pass the floor to Anthony Bartzokas.
Thank you, Vasilis, and many thanks to our panelists for being with us today and having prepared their presentations. The way we organize these panels, these are about, you know, strategic issues for Greece, but also the Southeast Europe. The way we organize these panels, you know, is that we develop some core ideas and background research. You have seen our introductory slides that provide the framework. And this is extremely important for this particular panel because it is about growth drivers in Greece. Could I have my slides, please, on the screen? And go straight to the second one, please. So that gives you an idea of, you know, what kind of introductory framework we provided to our panelists. The idea is that, you know, growth and growth trajectories are very important for the Greek economy, but then how we discuss it? Because if you look at the policy debate in Greece, most of the time is about wishful thinking. We should have a better business model for the economy. We should have deeper structural reforms, etc., etc. So what we propose here is to start with the overview. What is the macroeconomic scenario with the Greek economy? And then go through three different levels of analysis. One is what the mainstream is suggesting, main factors, main growth drivers. What kind of upcoming challenges we need to discuss in order to calibrate policy in a better way. And third, following on what Vasilis was suggesting, is very important to see if we can find interesting insights from research that really combines also market participation. And that explains why we invited the four chief economists from the Greek banks to be with us today. So these are the three levels of analysis that we propose for, say, a more analytical perspective on growth challenges for the Greek economy to move beyond, say, wishful thinking. Second slide, please. We prepared a slide deck with several insights there. I will stick to just a few of them. Let me start with projections. It is very clear that the Greek economy entered a better phase, so to speak, 2% growth through the years. But is this optimal? Is this sustainable? You can see, for example, that after 2026, the existing projections are pointing to a decline of fixed capital investment. These kind of things need to be raised and need to be discussed in more detail. Next slide, please. The debate for the Greek economy during the crisis was about, shifting to an export orientation model. Here you see the growth accounting for the Greek economy through the years. And what is interesting to see is to what extent the light green column is really dominating the trend in recent years. This is something to be discussed. Next slide, please. Again, talking about the mainstream perspectives on growth drivers, perhaps the core issue so far has been fixed capital investment. To what extent we have a fixed capital investment gap and what should be done? This slide points to a different direction. It points to the quality of fixed capital investment because you see that, fixed capital investment is recovering, but when you move to the columns down, which are the most important part, which is fixed capital investment for production, the situation is not very promising. And this is something to be considered. Next slide, please. This is a very interesting story that is being revealed in this slide. Productivity is a challenge, and catching up European productivity levels is very important. But when you see how that is distributed in different sectors, you can see lagging problems, but also differentiation between sectors. It will be interesting to see what our panelists have to say about that. Next slide. And of course, competitiveness, as you can see, remains a stable problem in Greece, even after some recovery in recent years. Next. Vasilis said, what is the role and contribution of bankers in this kind of debate? I mean, here we are at the core of the issue, corporate lending. And again, quality and new directions and new instruments of corporate lending are very important. I mean, if you take levels, the situation is improving. If you take, say, next slide, please. Next slide. Can I have next slide, please? If you take new ways of funding, innovative activities, then Greece is still lagging behind, and it will be interesting to see what is the views of our panelists on that. Next slide. One final mainstream approach on growth drivers is mobility of firms. And it's well established in the literature. It is a real problem in the Greek economy. It has been identified by several studies and research. You can see here, the low level of mobility in the Greek manufacturing sector compared to European average. Next slide. And then I think if we talk about growth drivers and policy for growth, it is very important to move beyond, say, mainstream approaches and look at upcoming challenges. And we have identified some of them. For example, how Greece will accommodate the challenges of energy transition, how the Greek economy and Greek economic policy can solve labor shortages that are increasingly pressure the productive sector, the problem of upgrading SMEs in value chain and all that. And finally, a very important issue, how Greek SMEs and the Greek manufacturing sector will deal with the phasing out of guarantees. Let me give you some examples. Next slide, please. You can see here a very interesting finding from a recent OECD study on Greek SMEs, innovation activities of Greek SMEs as they try to enter, say, global value chain networks. It is almost nothing. So this is a very important problem to be discussed and to be dealt with. Next slide. And I mentioned before guarantees. I mean, one of the legacies of the Greek crisis and one of the legacies of the COVID crisis is the extensive use of guarantees for SMEs. You can see here how it picked up in recent years and how it is much more than, say, the European average. So an interesting question for bankers and the banking sector is how we can deal with that problem, as we're phasing out from this era-end period of extensive guarantees. Next slide. And finally, we propose, some discussion on what global trade tensions will mean for the Greek economy. The current scenario is a smooth one, that first round effects are very limited, but then beyond that, problems might arise. It will be interesting to see what our panelists have to say about that. Next slide, please. And in this slide, what we try to do is we try to extract some useful insights from recent research by the teams of the four speakers. And the idea is that we argue and we believe that in the four systemic banks, important research, empirical research on the Greek economy is taking place, that it needs to be incorporated in any policy discussion about growth drivers. Examples here, we have seen very interesting research by Alpha Bank on export-oriented industries and how they diversified in recent years. We have seen important findings from Piraeus on the level of utilization of EU funding. We have seen from Eurobank interesting insights on levels of productivity, especially in the ICT sector, and how this gap is increasing in recent years. And from NBG, we have seen, for example, work that they have been doing on the current account deficit and how this is related to consumption, households, and overall economic activity. The point I'm trying to make is that this third level of analysis and consideration is very important, because if we really try to move away from wishful thinking and in a more analytical approach, insights that come from the real economy and from market participants combined with research insights are very important. And with that, I will stop my introductory presentation. More to be found in the detailed slide deck that we prepared and we uploaded. And then we can move in alphabetic order to our panelists. I will introduce them one after the other, and then they will have 10 minutes each to elaborate on their presentation. Our first panelist is Dr. Anastasatos. Dr. Anastasatos has a long career of empirical research in the Greek economy. Actually, his PhD was on currency crisis, which is very topical in recent months and weeks, I would say. I will urge you to visit their website, because Eurobank, under his leadership, has been doing a lot of work on the investment gap in the Greek economy. And you can see concrete proposals there on what needs to be done and how that could be calculated in a way. We're very happy to have you with us, Dr. Anastasatos. The floor is yours for 10 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Professor Bardzokas. Thank you very much for the invitation, yourself and LSE and the Hellenic Observatory, for this very topical discussion. I'll try to be very comprehensive, to touch upon some of the issues that you mentioned. I'll try to be selective, because obviously the list is very long. So I'll try to share my screen. Is it full screen now? Can you see it?
If you could enlarge.
We see it, but it's not full screen.
Now, perhaps?
Much better.
Okay. So let me start by considering the point in which we are at the moment. We congratulated ourselves about the fact that the Greek economy has been growing with rates quicker than the Eurozone average for the past 3 to 4 years. But let's not forget that the Greek economy is coming from a multi-year debt crisis in which it lost more than one quarter of its GDP in real terms. And in these last 4 to 5 years, it has just reclaimed 44% of the losses of the previous period. So in order to come back to the level of real GDP of 2008, the Greek economy would need to grow by an average 2.4% real GDP growth rate per year until 2031. And obviously, this is quite an ambitious target. If the economy was growing by its long-term potential GDP growth rate, as calculated by the European Commission, of 1.3%, it would take it 13 years just to reach back the level of 2008. So this is a marathon, it's not a sprint. And my point, the point I will try to make, is that the Greek economy, we are happy about the fact that it's growing, but it could and it should grow quicker than it does at the moment. So why doesn't it? The point here that I'm trying to make is that the fact that it doesn't is related to the growth model and the fact that this growth model has not been sufficiently reformed during the previous years, despite the three memoranda and the efforts of all governments. First finding that I would like to highlight. After 15 years of crisis and memoranda, the share of consumption over GDP remains close to 69% when the Eurozone averaged 52 to 53%. So a full 16 points higher than the share of consumption in the Eurozone. The Greek GDP relies a lot on consumption. And the flip side of this is the fact that the saving rate of the Greek private sector is very low. Indeed, when we take the household sector alone, the saving rate of the household sector remains on negative territory. We are the only country in the European Union in which the household sector has a negative saving rate. And this reflects to the fact that the investment the investment share on GDP remains relatively lower and the consumption share relatively higher. How lower? Until 2022, the real change of the gross capital formation was lower than depreciation. As a result, up to 2022, the real fixed capital stock was continuing to decrease. It was only the last 2 years that investment was higher than depreciation, the capital stock increased. So let's see that in more detail. Investment share of GDP at the end of 2024 was 15.3%. This is much higher than the 11% 5 years ago. In absolute terms, more than 6% increase. However, it's still 6.5 percentage points below the Eurozone average. We have calculated that in order for the Greek share of investment over GDP to reach the Eurozone average, it would take a yearly average real growth rate of 8% up to the end of the decade. Somebody would say, okay, maybe investment is not that high, but its composition is better compared to the pre-crisis period. This is partially true, to the extent that the real estate component is lower now than it used to be in previous years. But if you see the cumulative increases in the right-hand side panel, you would see that the real estate is the quicker increasing component of investment. So the composition is better, but it's not moving in the right direction. What is the right direction? Incorporating higher contributions by sectors that incorporate more knowledge and more technology into the product mix of Greece. And just a reminder here that capacity utilization of the Greek economy is now above 80%. So it would be impossible to increase manufacturing production further without any investment in these sectors. So perhaps one would say, okay, we don't have enough resources domestically because we don't save enough. Perhaps we can rely from abroad, from capital from abroad, to increase our chances. This is not really the case, in the sense that FDI is increasing. Last year, we had 6 billion of FDI. However, half of it relates to real estate purchases as part of the golden visa schemes or the tourist rentals, etc. Another 30% was related to NPE management, which has houses below that. And the remainder, which is less than 30%, was directed towards sectors that have to do with acquisition of existing businesses, practically for exploiting dominant positions in the domestic market. And greenfield investment was practically zero. So actually, it doesn't help a lot. So one maybe think that the problem has to do with the fact that the investment is relatively low. But there is another thing that has to do with the current account. The current account is systematically in deficit, and it actually falsifies the expectation of a declining deficit. It was 6.4% of GDP last year. And the problem with that is that we don't expect it to fall anytime soon below the level of 3 or 4% that would conceivably be considered sustainable in the long term. Why? Because both consumption and investment are rich in import content. We have calculated that from the imports of Greece, almost one third concerns investment goods, another third consumption goods, another third oil. So as the GDP grows, we would expect all three components of imports to increase even more than proportionally. So we need more work to be done in both exports promotion and import substitution. Tourism is doing well, but tourism alone cannot hold the burden of increasing imports. And tourism itself, actually, is in a need of a new reform model in its contribution, in the sense that the revenues and arrivals of tourists are increasing all the time, but the expenditure per trip is falling in the last years. And this is partly for good reasons and partly for bad reasons relating to the quality of tourism that is inbound. So what's the problem? Why we don't invest enough and why we don't export enough? It's not price competitiveness. If one sees real exchange rates in both ULC and CPI terms, you will see that all the pre-crisis period losses have been reclaimed. Some deterioration in the last quarters, but generally speaking, price competitiveness is okay. The problem is with quality competitiveness. So I have gathered here to show a couple of indicators that point to the problem with the structural characteristics of the economy and the fact that it lags behind particular areas. The first, the left-hand side panel, speaks about the complexity of products and services in the Greek product mix. So essentially, the message here is that the Greek economy is tilting towards low complexity and therefore low value-added products and services. As a matter of fact, we have the 52nd place among 145 countries, and we are one of the worst in the European Union in terms of complexity. So the message here is that an economy cannot grow forever just based on tourism and other entertainment and industries. Why is this happening? One main reason is the burden of the regulatory environment onto entrepreneurial activity. On the right-hand side panel, you can see the Global Business Complexity Index as measured by TMF. And the finding here is that Greece ranks first. Unfortunately, this is a very bitter first, that is the worst, among 79 jurisdictions on the complexity of the regulatory environment. In the next slide, you can see some indicators regarding the quality of governance in the economy in general. So you can see in the left-hand side the World Bank's worldwide governance indicators that notwithstanding the fact that there has been progress in recent years, however, yet there is negative difference with the Eurozone average in all main areas that comprise the quality of the economic environment in Greece. So there is negative difference in government effectiveness, in regulatory quality, in rule of law, in control of corruption, etc. And one thing that I would like to touch very quickly for the sake of time here has to do with the fact that some of it relates to the average size of business in Greece, the fact that the average Greek business is very low, and this contributes to the right-hand side panel. The fact that the innovation in Greece is very low. Small businesses don't usually invest a lot into innovation. Greece as a whole, the Greek economy performs very poorly when it comes to the introduction of innovation within the product mix. So we need investment. We need structural reform in order to boost investment. What kind of structural reform? I would like to highlight a couple of priorities. I think we have done quite a few things in previous years regarding digitization. This was highlighted in our research, but however, these were the low-hanging fruits, as somebody else has said. There are certain things that are still need to be done and are quite difficult in the sense that they require unsettling reforms. For example, in the justice sector, Greece has the longest number of days in the European Union for which a first instance civil case needs to be finalized. The number is 746 vs EU average of 239. So you can understand that this has a very negative effect on entrepreneurial activity. The second area I would like to touch upon has to do with the fact that the country still doesn't have a finalized cadastre and land uses. In order for investment to take place, we need entrepreneurs to know where and what they can build without posing too much burden onto the environment. And the third aspect I would like to touch upon has to do with the fact that smaller businesses not only don't invest enough into innovation, but have limited access to the capital markets as well. And this is perhaps one first answer to your question. It's not bank lending that is lagging behind in small businesses, is very small access to the capital markets because of their size. So a last word, for the sake of time, it doesn't need to be like that. We have done, have constructed some research in previous years indicating what are the sectors in which the Greek economy has a comparative advantage, judging by the manifested, already manifested, investment interest into the economy. So apart from the traditional sectors of, you know, tourism and shipping and agriculture, we show that there is interest for investing in new sectors like transportation, ICT, logistics, in energy, waste management, and in new sectors of manufacturing. And why not? Greece has a skilled personnel, has strategic location, it is inexpensive. It still needs to invest a lot and a lot more into structural reform in order to boost private investment. And most importantly, to attract back some of the people that it lost during the previous year. So if today's seminar is successful in even attracting back one of the guys that left the country in the previous years, that would be a huge success for the seminar. So I'll leave it here. Thanks for the attention, and perhaps in the Q&A we can come back to some of it.
Thank you, Dr. Anastasatos. I think your presentation is a very good example of how we can really focus on the mainstream corridor, so to speak, for growth, drivers for growth, and then elaborate further and guide policy towards, you know, doing specific things. But my question would be more on upcoming challenges. I mean, if I take your framework and the data you provided here and your insights and ask you to, and challenge you actually, with an upcoming challenge, like green transition, for example. How green transition will fit in your understanding, your framework? Is this benefiting some aspects? Is it creating problems to some other? For example, I was thinking about current account. What would be the scenario where oil is declining in importance in the global economy? This kind of things, you know, that really put together upcoming challenges and your concrete framework on mainstream drivers of growth. If you could comment, please. Thank you.
Yeah, sure. First of all, since you mentioned the energy sector, obviously there is a positive contribution to be seized here in the sense that, as I said, one third of our imports concern oil. So to the extent that the higher penetration of renewable energy reduces the reliance from oil, this is a negative, a positive thing for the current account and growth in general. However, again, there is a point here that relates to the design and implementation of structural reform in order to seize the full benefit. Just to give you the numbers, Greece produced last year 15 gigawatts of energy from renewables. But out of these 15 gigawatts, just 6 out to 11 were actually feasible to be used in the system because of the fact that, as you know, renewables are stochastic. And the Greek grid doesn't have enough capacity to transform all this energy and doesn't have enough storage capacity in order to store the energy when, you know, the demand is not high, and use it when the demand is high. So we invested a lot into you know, photovoltaics and wind parks, etc., but we didn't invest enough into grids and storage. And the target model as well has some problems, and this is reflect to the fact that the average price that is paid by the Greek household is higher than the Eurozone average. So again, this is a question of design of structural reform of the energy market in order to seize the full benefit of the green transition. Greece is a place that has a natural comparative advantage when it comes to wind and solar power, but it would take a much more carefully designed and implemented policy in order to seize the full benefits.
Thank you. And the point you're making is very important, because it introduces a time frame in reforms, but also in what needs to be done, which is extremely important, I think. Let me now turn to Dr. Kapopoulos. Dr. Kapopoulos is also a lecturer at the university, like Dr. Anastasiadis before, and he has a long track of research on empirical issues in Greek economy and also the banking sector. His experience and his background is reflected in what his team is doing in Alpha, because they are producing very interesting thematic reports on what needs to be done in the Greek economy in specific sectors. And I will urge everybody to have a look to the publications that they are producing from time to time. Dr. Kapopoulos, you have the floor for 10 minutes, please. Thank you.
Can I just interject if we can try to keep more in time so that we don't run out of time collectively? Thank you very much. Mr. Kapopoulos, you're muted. Mr. Kapopoulos, if you can unmute yourself.
Okay, I think that, okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mazzoukas. Thank you for the invitation. I suppose that you see the presentation, or I failed to share.
All good. We can see
all good. Okay, thanks. Let me start with, first of all, to see the growth drivers for the Greek economy. As we look for that in a medium and a longer term perspective, let me start with the three basic factors included in the production function: the quantity of labor, the quality of capital, and how they work together, productivity. The lack that reflects technology, research, innovation, but above all, entrepreneurship should manage the three factors defining a country's productive capacity. Let's take these factors in Greece one by one. Labor supply. First of all, we have to agree that it is not feasible for a nation to implement large-scale investment and development plans in the face of labor shortage. Today, several sectors of the economy are struggling to find workers, not only for highly specialized positions, as one might expect, but at all levels of operations, production, and services. The graph here shows some clear trends in the aging of the population, with a decline in the younger and age groups, and an increase in the older cohorts of 65 plus and 80 plus. The 65 plus, for example, grew by 10% in Greece. As a result, there is strong pressure on both the liability side of our pension system, but also on the dynamics of employment and labor supply. This is really the situation in terms of the aging society, and this is an obstacle, a real obstacle for the economy. The employment rate in Greece, and I'm going to the next driver, the next slide. The employment rate is among the lowest in the euro area, even though Greek employees work the most hours per week. It is therefore necessary to adopt policies to increase labor. How we can do that? First, given the cyclical that the cyclical unemployment is falling, as we can see in the graph on the left, and in any case, it depends upon investment. Reduction of structural unemployment is of great importance, especially for the coming period of the AI transition, which will profoundly reshape employment and work as we currently understand them. Greece has one of the highest levels of structural unemployment in the EU. It is estimated close to 9% in 2025, due mainly to the mismatches between labor demand and supply for specific skills. There is a need for targeted training programs for upskilling, reskilling to meet current labor needs in areas such as digital economy, renewable energy, medical advances, healthcare, as well as also further links between higher education and real market needs. Secondly, we need to increase the participation rate of young people, women and elderly, which is significantly lower than the men, as you can see in the graph on the right. Only the male participation rate has approached the European Union average. Third, we should limit undeclared work through better control mechanisms and lower tax burden. And we have to incentivize the reversal of the so-called brain drain, a bad legacy of the crisis period. And finally, this policy should be combined with a national immigration policy so that Greece can rely on fully legal workers who actively contribute to the growth dynamics of the country. And let's go to the second driver of future growth, capital and investment. As can be seen in the graph on the left, between 2011 and 2021, gross fixed capital formation fell short of depreciation, leading to an erosion of fiscal capital. It's highlighted also by Tasos earlier. This decline affected both the quantity and the quality of physical assets, as there was a lack of adequate investment incorporating new technologies during this period. What does it mean? That from 2018, we have seen one of the biggest increases in investment, and you can see that in the graph on the right, mainly thanks to an increase in investment and an increase in public investment and an increase in foreign investment, direct investment. So these factors brought investment as a percentage of GDP, from 11% in 2018 to almost 16% in 2024. But as we can see the graph, despite the large increase, it remains at lowest level compared to other European countries. The Resilient Recovery Fund is expected to play a key role in stimulating growth, especially in the areas of green transition, digital economy. But what about after 2027 when the program will expire? So we have here some at least three more drivers for attracting investment after 2027. First, the further reduction of the non-wage labor cost, labor cost for employees and employers, even if it implies lower social security contributions and a lower tax burden for sure. As the graph on the left shows, the level of non-wage labor cost, also known as the tax wedge, is negatively related to the level of employment in Greece based on historical observation over the last 25 years. A negative relationship also seems to exist between the tax wedge and the level of investment, as seen in the graph on the right, based on cross-sectional data for several countries during the last 3 years. Consequently, a drastic reduction would stimulate investment and boost employment. Coming now to another reform for future growth is, as Tasos also highlighted, to reduce judicial inefficiency. It has only recently begun to be seriously addressed by the current government, I mean. And you know that this is a deterrent to attracting investment. The most commonly used measure of judicial efficiency is shown in the graph on the left. Disposition time is the time it takes for a case to be resolved from the time it is filed to the time a final decision reached. As you can see from the graph, courts in Greece take much longer time than everywhere. In the graph on the right, I highlight the positive relationship in many countries between the clearance ratio in the courts and the growth rate of investment. The clearance rate measures the number of cases disposed of in a given period, a year here in our graph. It is calculated actually as the ratio of the number of cases resolved to the number of cases received during the year. A clearance rate above 100% indicates that the courts are resolving more disputes than they receive. The growth enhancing quality of an efficient judicial system is documented here, and it is related with the enforcement of contracts, the protection of the property rights. In such an environment, firms are more willing to invest because they are confident that their investments will be safe at the end. So moving to a next driver for future growth. Here in the slide, this slide, we highlight the document, the investment enhancing quality of governance, in the right hand side, using a sample of countries for a period from 90 EU countries from the period from 1998 until 2021. It is the average level. However, as shown in the left hand chart, Greece's government effectiveness indicator lags behind the EU average, as well as periphery countries and core countries. When I'm talking about periphery countries, I mean Cyprus, Italy, Portugal, Spain. So we are at the bottom of the distribution. But it's not just the public sector having governance issues. Micro, small, and medium-sized enterprises are the backbone of the Greek economy. They account for 85% of total employment. However, the small average size of firms hampers productivity growth and also the exploitation, the ability to exploit the economies of scale. In addition, the observed quality of corporate governance in the Greek SMEs, small and medium enterprises, is a problem. So incentives for mergers, acquisitions, and partnerships are needed in that front. And let me conclude with a comment on the extroversion of the Greek economy, the importance of which has already been mentioned by Mr. Barzokas earlier. In the graph on the left, we saw the evolution of the ratio of GVA, of gross value added, of sectors producing tradable goods to total GVA in Greece. As you can see, this ratio has been on a gradually upward trend in the whole period following the global financial crisis of 2008, except the year of pandemic and the supply chain disruption during the energy crisis. This trend is mainly linked to the depreciation of the nominal effective exchange rate, which implies an improvement in competitiveness, mainly due to the internal devaluation policies pursued during the period of memorandum of understanding and the improvement in productivity during the recent years. It's important to note that in addition to the product analysis of exports in manufacturing illustrated in the graph on the right, it is essential to explore new market opportunities and strategic shifts in the international trade, as we have seen in recent weeks. After the trade protection in policies by USA, the world is changing rapidly and becoming more volatile in terms of trade policies and also in the geopolitical landscape. Greek export-oriented firms should consider targeting countries such as India, China as well. This is what I have in mind to contribute. I hope that I am on time. We'll discuss afterwards the drivers. And if
thank you,
any
thank
clarification,
you, Mr.
I'm at your disposal.
Thank you, Mr. Kakopoulos. Your presentation nicely complements what Dr. Anastasatos had to say. I have one question because you raised an important issue about labor participation in an aging society, which I think is very important. How do you think you can combine this with the Greek challenge with productivity, because we're lagging behind in terms of productivity at the sectoral level. And at the same time, you argue that we should increase labor participation as a priority. How do you think you can combine these two objectives in a way?
Yeah, I think that the productivity issue for Greece is related with the number of self-employed and the number of the labor of the workers. It is also related with the level of the size of the small and medium term medium enterprises. This is a big issue because SMEs actually produces 60% almost two-thirds of the GVA in Greece. And the key problem here is not so much related with the number of people coming, for example, the brain gain issue, which is of great significance to resolve it. But there is a key problem, which is the low level of financial literacy and confidence in decision-making in small and medium enterprises. It is also an issue of credit. There is no way to improve your productivity in a creditless world. So almost 20% of SMEs do not dare go to banks to apply for financing, for example, a group known as in statistics as discarded borrowers. They believe that they will only be able to get a loan with collateral such as their home, unaware of the financial instruments. So having said that, it seems that SMEs modernization is a critical element for grasping productivity gains. But there is a need for action here, and commerce, newcomers with business ideas can help significantly. There is an issue of mindset. There is not only something related with numbers and the aging population. It is also a need for an increase in the average size which of the enterprises, which presupposes their intention to be involved in partnerships and collaborations. There is a need also for an improvement in the research and development culture. And as I said previously, the advancements in the corporate governance in the small and medium enterprises are also of great significance.
Thank you. Let me now turn to Dr. Lekos. Dr. Lekos has a long career in economic research, both in Greece but also in the UK, Bank of England and other places. He is carefully monitoring the Greek economy and also the global economy, sometimes with views, you know, against the common wisdom, so to speak. And the work he's been doing is extremely useful because he has this data set and database with Greek firms monitoring their financial performance overall, which is extremely useful for ideas, but also insights for policy. Dr. Lekos, the floor is yours for 10 minutes, please.
Yes, thank you very much. Thank you very much for the invitation. Hopefully, you will be able to see my presentation in full page format.
Yes, it is there. Yes.
Excellent. Okay. So, in order to save time and avoid replication of versus what Tassos and Panagiotis have already sort of already presented, I have decided to, instead of making a general comment regarding the Greek economy, I have decided to focus on two specific issues. And these are very important issues, at least according to my opinion, because I think that they present a specific and very important impediment to growth. So the two questions that I have chosen to focus upon, the first one has to do with the surprising degree of discontent or lack of optimism, of pessimism exhibited by the Greek households. And the second has to do with the lack of a substantial improvement on investments. despite the fact that as the other sort of colleagues have mentioned, the lack of investment growth up until now. So let me start with the first one. Okay, so according to to sort of various sentiment indicators, if you look at this screen on the left hand side, you can see the economic sentiment indicator in Greece with the dark green line vis-a-vis the rest of the euro area, and you can see that after the reopening of the economies after the COVID shock, the Greek economy has been by and large substantially more optimistic regarding its prospect vis-a-vis the euro area average. Yet, if you split that index into households and corporates, which is something that you see on the right-hand side of the chart, Greek households have been persistently more pessimistic or less optimistic, if you want, vis-a-vis the European households, while Greek corporates have been much more optimistic. So the overall optimistic sentiment in the Greek economy is much more a feature of the business side rather than the corporate side. And this is a very big puzzle because, as we have been discussing all along, the Greek economy has been registering substantial growth rates. So, if you look at the left-hand side chart in my presentation, you can see with the yellow line a substantial improvement in the labor market. Unemployment has been declining from very high levels of 2013, 2014. It is now well below the pre-crisis levels. Employment is increasing. And if you look at on the right-hand side chart, you can see that disposable income in the Greek households has been increasing as well. Irrespective of whether you see it in nominal terms with the yellow line or with the in real terms, so adjusting for inflation, there were years that Greek household disposable income has been increasing to the tune of 10% year on year. There was one, if you look at it on a real level, so adjusting for inflation, 2022 was a negative shock because of unanticipated inflation. But overall, Greek household income, disposable, this is after subtracting for personal income tax, has been increasing substantial year over year. So a strong labor market, substantial increases in disposable income, both real and nominal, and yet Greek households are very pessimistic about, their current economic situation. And I think this is a question that, requires a two-part answer. That's why I have, two slides to answer this question. The first part of the answer has to do with improved tax compliance. Okay, so on the left-hand side chart, I have estimated the effective tax rate on consumption. Okay, so the dark green line is Greece, the yellow line is the European Union average, and you can see that starting from very low levels of tax compliance in the pre-crisis Greece, now we have reached very high levels of compliance, way above the euro area average. So as we speak, using 2024 data, Greeks, the ratio of collected tax on consumption by the Greek state divided by their pre-tax consumption has reached the high levels of 21.7% versus a 17% EU average. Okay, and that is a result of improved tax compliance and a more efficient tax collection mechanism from the side of the Greek state. Similarly, if you look at VAT gap on the right-hand side chart, you can see again Greece with dark green, yellow, the EU average. And we, because these are data coming from the European Commission, we have data unfortunately going only up to 2022. But if you look at again the picture, starting from a VAT gap of 25%, which actually meant that 25% of VAT wasn't reported and collected, we got to a level of 13.7%. And I bet you that, you know, once we see data for 23 and 2024, this VAT gap will be pretty close to the EU average. That's excellent news from the side of the government, because it means that all these efforts to improve tax compliance and improve the tax collection mechanism are working. But if you want to see the other side of the coin, it means that the tax burden of the effective tax burden of the average Greek household is improving, is increasing. So in reality, Greeks pay, at least on consumption, pay more taxes than what they used to do. But that, as I said, that is the one side of the first part of the answer. The second has to do with the fact that, you know, public consumption as percentage of GDP is declining. The level of public consumption has remained stable in euros, but if we look at it as a percentage of GDP, it has been declining, and it's way below the EU average. And so we have a public consumption as part of GDP is 18% versus 21.5% in the euro area average. This explains partly why GDP is not growing as fast, but it is indicative of the lack of services provided from the side of the state to the Greek households. Public consumption refers to payments in kind provided from the Greek state or any sort of state to its citizens. As a result, if you look at on the right-hand side, the amount of money that Greeks need to spend on services that should be provided by the state, such as healthcare and education, is way above the EU average. So just to give you some data, you can see from the chart that Greeks on a monthly basis pay 7.7%, almost 8% of their monthly spending on healthcare, vis-a-vis 3.7% for the rest of Europe, and they devote 3.5% on education versus 1% for the EU. So I think these two sides of the coin, or these two pieces of information, are very important to understand to explain a very big chunk of the Greek households' discontent. They pay a lot of taxes now, but they don't receive a lot of services. So this is the first part of my of this presentation title. We are experiencing an incomplete transition from private to public space. The first leg of the journey, Greeks paying more taxes, is well underway, and it has been a very big success of the current government. What we are missing is the reverse side of the journey. So what we are missing is sort of for the Greek state to start providing adequate level of services to Greek households. So that Greeks will get the feeling that they get a return on their taxes. So that is one of the first half of my presentation. For the second part, I want to sort of elaborate a little bit on this case that we have made time and again regarding investment hysteresis. So if you look at it on cash basis, investments are growing. But if you look at it as a percentage of GDP, so if you look at the right-hand side chart of my presentation, you will see that after some initial acceleration, investments in Greece were, you know, 15%, 15.2% in 2023. It grew to 15.3%. So you, from the chart, you cannot even see the difference on sort of investment acceleration. And as it has been mentioned by my colleagues, this is a very big puzzle. Why it is a very big puzzle?
Sorry to intervene. We're running out of time, so if you could wrap up in the next minute, perhaps.
Okay. So investment, if you look at capital productivity, capital is very productive. Greek households, Greek corporates, if you look at the gross operating surplus, again, they are very profitable. If you look at, Greece is running, is an overheating economy. It has a positive output gap, and the levels of capacity utilization are extremely high. If you look at the right-hand side chart, you know, on the services side, capacity utilization is close to 95%. And again, if you look at manufacturing, very high levels. You need to go back to the beginning of the century to see these high levels of capacity utilization in the Greek economy. And as it has been mentioned before, you know, there is a huge amount of funding either on grants or on subsidized loans available to the Greek economy. So despite all these favorable factors, if you look at a survey that conducted by the European Investment Bank in 2024, only 14% of the Greek companies perceive the need to invest more. 72% believe that they have invested the right amount. And it's a very worrying fact that if you look at the last column in this slide, you will see that 21% of large corporates in Greece believe that they have invested too much, so that they have done investments that have not provided the levels of return that that they were hoping for. And my final slide has to do, from the same survey, has to do with the purpose of investments. Again, despite the fact that we haven't seen any kind of capacity expansion, only 22% of Greek corporates have invested to expand their capacity. The vast majority, 56% of Greek corporates, have sort of investment simply for replacement reasons, so simply to cover their depreciation needs. So the final slide, you know, on the reasons for the lack of investment, you know, this is a very huge puzzle to me, because Greek corporates are productive and profitable. The level of capacity utilizations is at record levels, and there is a huge amount of public and private sector money available to flow into the Greek corporate sector. So just to justify the second part of my presentation, I think that, you know, the solution will be to run what's called a high pressure economy, to allow the demand to exceed supply over a number of years in order to force the private sector to move into an investment-led growth and to revive the Greek economy's animal spirits. Thank you very much. That's all that I wanted to say, and apologies if I overran my time.
Until you propose that we keep the questions for a bit later.
Let's move to Dr. Magginas, the chief economist of National Bank of Greece. Dr. Magginas has done research on monetary economics and the banking sector, the credit channel from the banking sector to the real economy. NBG has a long history of economic research. It's the institution that still has a lot of work on Southeast Europe and the monitoring these economies. And they are producing very interesting findings on medium to short-term trends in the Greek economy every 3 months, and they are quite valuable. Dr. Marginas, the floor is yours, please. Thank you.
Good afternoon. Thank you for the kind invitation. I will try to keep this presentation very short because the distinguished colleagues already have covered, touch upon several important issues for the Greek economy. I will apologize for potential overlaps in some slides, but I will use the slides in order to justify a more positive take I have as regards the near-term developments of the economy, but I will totally share the questions raised about the medium-term potential and the long-term potential of the economy. Starting from the first slide, I present in an index form the trajectory of some key economic variables from the lowest point of the multi-year crisis, 2017, through the latest point for which we have available data. As you can see, several economic variables, such as house prices, bank deposits, gross operating surplus of the private sector, and to a lesser extent, GDP and employment, are showing a very strong recovery over the past few years. As Mr. Anastasatos already mentioned, several of these variables remain at a significant lower point compared to the pre-crisis highs, especially the real economy variables. Of course, in this at this point, we have to take into account that the historical peak, the economic peak of the Greek economy, actually coincided with a very large primary deficit and also with a very wide current account deficit. So if we adjust for the role of the state and also for the very strong role of the banking sector, because for several years we had a net credit expansion that exceeded 25 billion euros per year, excluding this fiscal and credit impulse, I think that the state of play of the economy at this point is quite impressive. If we also take into account the fact that we're living in a world of very high volatility, the world economy get through several shocks over the previous years in a very short period of time. So in this respect, the clearly upward trend we're seeing in several variables of the economy is quite encouraging. The same message is actually transmitted from this graph, which actually shows a very long period of lower GDP growth for the economy, for the Greek economy, and then a very strong recovery post-COVID, which actually now is translated to a superior growth path compared to the euro area average. A very critical element in the decisions, in the attractiveness of the economy, and a cornerstone of the risk assessment of the economy, the issue of fiscal credibility and public debt. It is very difficult to see a viable recovery in investment when the risk premium of the state, of the public sector, at a very high level. So I think we run actually the second year in which the risk assessment of the economy, the price of risk and the risk appetite for Greek asset is increasing. It is impossible to see a revival in fixed capital formation, which entails a commitment of financial resources for a long period of time without visibility regarding the economic policy and without having a lower risk assessment for the state. The steadily declining trajectory of the public debt is a very critical element at this juncture. As you can see from the trajectory of debt to GDP ratio for major economies like US and China, the the conditions are quite more challenging over the past few years, and the trajectory is trending upwards. So in a period of increased financial volatility, in which we have also uncertainty regarding the economic policy management in the US, and the potential turbulence could be transmitted at a very high pace in the global economy, it's very useful and very encouraging to see the Greek economy being in a credible fiscal path. Actually, Greece achieved the largest primary surplus as percent of GDP, also in absolute terms, ever recorded in Greek public finance history. Of course, this has a dual interpretation. At the same time, we can say that the 2.3 growth outcome of the economy in the previous year actually was against a significant fiscal drag, which possibly exceeded 1.5 percentage points of GDP. So the including cyclical tailwinds, of course, and efficiency gains, the fiscal position improved significantly. And this improvement also is reflected in the relative valuation of Greek assets, represented in a simplifying way in the right-hand side graph that presents the yields of Greek of 10-year government bonds for Greece, Italy, US, and Germany. You can see from the dark line that Greece actually runs the second year of negative spread against the Italian bond, and actually the spread over bund, which is the gray area, has been lower at pre-crisis lows. So there is an improvement in the risk appetite in the Greek economy, especially in the past 2 years. The business sector starts to gain traction. In the left-hand side graph, you can see the business turnover and gross operating surplus, the profitability, the macroeconomic proxy of profitability for the business sector. You can see that this path is clearly trending upwards. And another interesting finding is in the right-hand side graph, we can see that the manufacturing PMI for Greece, which was typically a laggard in the European space as regards the performance of the manufacturing sector, Greece exhibits the strongest performance, the strongest reading in terms of manufacturing PMI since early 2023. The shaded area actually presents the range of outcomes for all other European countries. So the manufacturing sector is performing strongly. And at the same time, we have a labor market that is in a very good position. In the right-hand side graph, I present the trajectory of real labor productivity for total economy. Conditions regarding the industrial sector is even more strong. In the left-hand side graph, I present the deviation of employment per sector compared to the peak to the peak for most sectors in 2008, before the eruption of the Greek crisis, in the dark shaded bars. And in the lighter bars, I present the deviation from the worst point of the crisis in 2013. As you can see, in several sectors, the employment has exceeded the pre-crisis highs. On the other hand, we have several sectors in which we continue to have a significant deviation. For example, the construction, trade sector, agriculture, and manufacturing, because we have a very deep restructuring of the economy. I'm also more optimistic regarding the outcomes of labor productivity. As you can see, in terms of real labor productivity, presenting the EU average and the Greece and Greece's performance for sub-periods, excluding periods, years with a very high volatility, like the COVID year and the subsequent of COVID, you can see that Greece return now shows a significant positive labor productivity gap over the past 3 years, of course, having to offset a decade of very poor performance over the previous year. At the same time, the quality of capital is improving due to the scarcity of capital. The returns of capital are very strong. This is also a very important driver of investment decisions. As you can see, due to the low level of capital stock and increasing gross value added and firm profitability, the returns of capital are very strong, are heading upwards, and it is also a very useful leading indicator of investment, rather a lagging indicator of investment. At the same time, my view on the investment gap remains less pessimistic. When we tend to account for the investment gap, we include in the capital stock several indicators of very strong construction activity before the eruption of the Greek crisis. As you can see in the left-hand side graph in the darker shaded areas, excluding construction, the total gross fiscal transformation as percent of GDP is close to all-time highs. Having an even more detailed view on these components, on the components of this GFCF, components related higher productive components that tend to support productivity, like investment in ICT equipment or in machinery and equipment, is also at all-time highs. So we have, of course, to catch up with a decade of low investment, but the quality mix of gross fiscal transformation is quite strong. What in the right-hand side graph, we start to have the elements of medium-term risks for the economy. We have an economy that increased its export performance. Actually, in absolute, in constant price terms, exports of goods and services are at all-time highs. And this actually has been achieved by a limited number of firms. We have a very high degree of concentration of exports. We have fewer and more competitive enterprises. But at the same time, in the line, you can see that the import dependence of the economy remains very high. I will discuss this in more detail in the next two slides. The issue of the current account deficit. In the left-hand side graph, you can see Greece's and euro area current account deficits as percent of GDP. Of course, we are quite the distance remains significant for the worst point of the Greek crisis, when the current account deficit was more than 15% of GDP. We had a spike during COVID and the inflation, post-COVID, during the inflation and energy crisis. We had an adjustment, but the deficit remains at a high level of minus 6%. What is happening? In the right-hand side graph, I present the decomposition of national savings, which closely matches the trajectory of current account deficit. It's actually a mirror image, despite some disparities in the earliest years. You can see that a significant difference compared to the pre-crisis years is that the government has turned now runs a saving surplus. On the other hand, we have a household sector that exhibits on a consistent base a negative savings gap, and also non-financial corporation being in a phase of faster spending for investment. The quality mix of financing of the current account deficit is presented in the graph at the left-hand side. You can see the financing sources of this deficit. In this graph, I have inverted the deficit. Now is presented, the current account deficit is presented in a positive scale. And the areas, the colored areas, are actually present the financing mix of the current account deficit. As you can see, in the pre-crisis year, the main financing mechanism was portfolio and other investment, which mainly comprised of government bonds. In the past few years, we have FDI gaining share in the financing mix, and also within the light blue area, the equity investment in equity, and also in portfolio investment in Greek bonds, but also in private sector bonds, is increasing. So the quality mix, we have some sources, some higher quality sources in order to finance our external deficit. And the FDI, I totally agree that the share in FDI of real estate sector is substantial, but we have an FDI that is at all-time highs in a period of increasing interest rates, in which FDI actually has slowed globally. And at the same time, we have an increasing share of manufacturing, transportation, storage, and other sectors in the mix of FDI, and also having in mind that the FDI includes not only private purchases of residential real estate, but also tourism-related spending. So actually, it's directly related. The real estate sector is directly related to the most significant competitive advantage of the economy, which is related to exporting services.
Mr. McGuinness, I think we will need to leave it here. Yes. I can give you 10 seconds to conclude if you want, but we need to take the next
time. The banking sector is there in order to support the economy. We run a very strong positive credit expansion gap compared to the euro area. And finally, the concluding slide actually is in full agreement with all colleagues, that the structural deficits of the economy and structural deficiencies represent the major drawback. So the challenge for the economy are mainly in the medium term and the longer term, and are becoming larger in an environment of increasing competition, geopolitical uncertainty, and revision in global economic policies and global trade. Thank you for your attention.
Okay, thank you to all the speakers. I think we are quite pressed with time. We slightly overrun each of the of the four or five presentations. I have four questions, and I would like to address to all panelists. I'm going to ask all four questions, and please choose one question each to answer. Harry Tsakalotos says that Greek banks have been criticized as being rather conservative and inward-looking, but does not allow them to properly support Greek corporates, particularly small and medium enterprises. We touched upon this in at least a couple of presentations. Is this a fair criticism? What steps should the banks take to become facilitators for growth, lending more, supporting more, especially small businesses? Another question has to do with the other side of the funding. Dr. Antoni Rodolakis is asking, how do the panelists view the role of foreign private institutional investors like equity firms, venture capitalists, hedge funds, and so forth, in bridging some of the investment gap? Any current institutional obstacles, any insights would be appreciated. So that's the external hedge fund financing. Marinos Kambisiulis from City University, I think, asks about brain drain. In your opinion, can the brain drain phenomenon be realistically reversed? Present efforts seem to be focused around emotional factors rather than concrete reforms. We also touched upon the issue of reforms. How can Greece sufficiently combat the appeal of free movement, work across more promising destinations in the EU and elsewhere? And last question by Yasonas Kanetakis from the University of California. How are you thinking about the opportunities and risks associated with this year's budget surplus? Again, we touched upon this already. In particular, how effective do you expect targeted incentives to be in supporting sustainable growth based on the dynamics discussed today? So the surplus, external funding from foreign institutional investors, why do the banks not support the SMEs, and can they do more to support them? And also the issue of the brain drain. I would like to maybe perhaps go to Mr. McGuinness first and ask if he would like to pick one of the four questions. But really in 2 minutes, please.
Yes, because there is a connection with my latest slides regarding the external funding of the economy. I could take the first question, or the second question, I think, referring to the external financing of the economy. And I have already mentioned the issue of risk assessment. When the economy provided clear signals of turnaround, then we had increasing inflows funding inflows recorded under the portfolio investment, especially, and also under FDI. We have an abundance of official financing through the RRF, and in the past 2 or 3 years, we are seeing a more active role of private financing of private capital that actually is very active also in the area of M&A activity. So the reason for which in the latest ECB survey we're seeing that the financing gap of the economy regarding medium-sized enterprises and also the whole of the overall population of enterprises that has been diminished to the lower level since 2013 is actually the combined outcome of the very, very rapid of the accelerating growth in corporate bank lending of banks. The net expansion, the net credit expansion was the highest since the eruption of the Greek crisis. About 10 billion euros were channeled from Greek banks to the private sector, to the corporate sector. And at the same time, we had very strong inflows of foreign capital due to the improving risk assessment and the risk rating of the economy. So following a very challenging period, we have an improvement in both fronts. Of course, the heightened volatility of financial markets increase the risk to see a slowing in this funding due to the uncertainty we are observing now in the international markets. But I think we are in a positive trajectory, and the rating upgrades of the economy also help to bring the economy back into the radar of more longer term, higher quality investment.
Yeah. Okay, so there is a risk outlook more than the any further institutional reforms. Can I pass on the floor to Mr. Lekos? Mr. Lekos, we cannot hear you, I don't think. Okay, let me go to Mr. Kapopoulos as Mr. Lekos tries to fix the sound. Mr. Kapopoulos, if you would like to unmute.
There are some questions. The question about the role of banking system or credit, probably. As I said previously, it is of great significance for the Greek banking system to support the real economy and also to support the small and medium enterprises, which are comprising the 85% of total employment, 60%, more than 60% of the GVA. So we have also to confess that a significant percentage of very small businesses, the so-called self-employed, have insurance and tax debt delayed obligation. It makes them less bankable. Therefore, to reduce this problem, to reduce the number of discouraged borrowers, as I said previously, businesses must improve their access to financing. How they can do that? They can do that so by presenting financial data that reflects the true potential, strengthening their corporate structures, ensuring adequate succession plans for their firms, seeking growth opportunities and investing in innovation and extroversion, drawing up a realistic and well-documented business plan that correctly reflects the business idea and presents the opportunities and risks, as well as how they will be mitigated, the risks, I mean, is a prerequisite for smooth financing by Greek banks. And this is of great significance. I think that not spend more time, but I think that this is the way out. This is the way.
Yeah. So it is about sort of tax compliance, but also the reforms that can support with that. Mr. Anastasatos, would you like to pick up one question either about the budget surplus or the brain drain?
Yeah, I'm happy with either. I don't know if Elias can speak now because I think we took his order.
We still don't have sound, I think.
Okay.
So you take it over.
Okay, I'll attempt a very quick answer to both, if you may. So let me start with the fiscal, and then if Elias can speak, I'll skip the second one. Regarding fiscal, it is true that the fiscal consolidation path so far has been predominantly based on increase of revenue. And this, in turn, was based on basically three factors. Firstly, obviously, economic growth. Okay. Secondly, the higher penetration of electronic means of payments, which has helped a lot into reducing the black economy, along, obviously, with any increases in the efficiency of the taxman, but also the non-inflation indexing of the tax scale. On the other hand, expenditure, if you see it as a percentage of GDP, has not reduced practically at all. And that means that there are some issues with the efficiency of public spending, despite the fact that some of the public services are not being properly dealt with, public expenditure being still such a high percentage of GDP. So I think that there are two questions going forward. Firstly, how to increase the efficiency of special spending by prioritizing the ones that are more important to growth and to, you know, inclusion, etc., without further increase into their absolute level. And secondly, any fiscal space, because fiscal space cannot now be dedicated to increasing expenditure because of a new fiscal framework, how you will prioritize uses in reducing the tax burden on the economy. And I think there, from my point of view, the priorities are actions that maximize benefit to growth, i.e. declining social security contributions, which have a very high multiplicatory effect. And secondly, reducing the tax burden onto wage earners, because these are the ones that have bear the brunt of fiscal consolidation in previous years. They are very heavily taxed in comparison to self-employed, and they haven't seen any improvement so far. I don't know if Elias can speak now, or should I say quick?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, to be honest, I was planning to address the budget surplus thing, and because, you know, I've spent quite some time explaining to you why I think that the Greek households are sort of are feeling pessimistic about their financial situation. And I think the point that I was trying to make time and again is that, you know, the ability of the state to collect taxes, especially on the consumption side, has been a runaway success. You know, and you know, this is evident on the you know, on the performance of the fiscal position of the Greek state. You know, recording 4.8% primary surplus. But you know, what is missing is the second part of the journey, where this surplus will return to the Greek economy and to the Greek households. And I think that it's far more important for the Greek state to try to improve, to take the long view and try to improve the quality of public services like education, healthcare, public transport, etc., rather than focus on the short-term kind of view of, giving handouts to Greek households. It requires much more effort from the side of the administration, not the government, but from the side of the public sector administration. But I think that this will be, if it is achieved, it will be a huge bonus to the Greek economy in the long term. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. One second, yes, please.
I don't think it's just sentimental reasons that could motivate a Greek or non-Greek person to come back to Greece. I think there are very real economic reasons. First of all, we're talking about an economy that is bound to overperform the European average for the years to come, that although not with the rate that we would like to see, but it is changing growth paradigms, it is improving its efficiency in the public administration. It has a very tight labor market. I mean, don't fool yourself with the 8.5% unemployment rate. The real indicators of tightness in the Greek labor market are, you know, you would find a job that would be well paid, and you'll be happier. This is not an important reason, so please consider it.
Okay, I will. Thanks, Tasso. I will pass the floor to Anthony. We have run out of time, but Anthony, if you want to take a minute or two to wrap it up. And also to thank, of course, our panelists.
Well, I think it was a very extremely important session, and we need to reflect on the presentation and the data provided, because our panelists have done an excellent job on moving from, say, mainstream corridors and trajectories of growth to challenges and highlighting these challenges. So we really need to reflect and produce a report that gives justice to what we hear so far. Thanks many to all the four panelists and to you, Vasilis, for running the session. Thank you.
Thanks to all, and thanks to the audience as well.
Thank you for the invitation. Thank you.
Thank you very much.